In Genesis 47, we are told how Israel or Jacob made an appearance before Pharaoh, the ruler of Egypt. As Israel or Jacob was in the presence of Pharaoh, a question was asked. The ruler of Egypt wanted to know how old Israel or Jacob was. This question is found in Genesis 47, verse 8, and the answer to this question is found in Genesis 47, verse 9. And Jacob or Israel said unto Pharaoh, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 133 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained unto the days of the years of life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage. Jacob or Israel said that he was 130 years old, and he said his days had been few as well as evil. Tonight we want to think about the first part of Jacob's answer. That is, he said he had only lived for a few years. Next Sunday night we hope to look at the second part of his answer, that being, of course, the word evil. In our day and time, 130 years, living that long does not sound like, to most people, a few years of life. In our culture, if people manage to live to 100, they would say that they have lived for a very long time. You may have on April 4th, just a few weeks ago of this year, seen that, an interesting story about Lila Denmark. This lady was a pediatrician, well-known pediatrician, and she was practicing medicine until she was 103 years old. She died at the age of 114, and she was our nation's oldest doctor. She rarely charged more than $10 for an office visit, and she did not employ a nurse or a receptionist in her practice. Some parents claim that Dr. Denmark was able to just look at a child and tell what was wrong. There were cases where parents brought a child to this doctor and complained that their child was behaving in a bad way, and this doctor was known to say, go look in the mirror. You get apples off apple trees. So had kind of an interesting mannerism. The doctor credited her longevity with drinking only water, eating no refined sugars, and including a protein and vegetable in her diet every single day. As healthy and as interesting and as active as this doctor was, and she was an interesting lady, she died. She's no longer here. In the grand scheme of things, Dr. Denmark's life, just like that of Jacob or Israel, was brief. Life is a brief and very fragile thing. There is a passage in the book of Job, and we're going to be reading this in just a moment, Job chapter 4, fairly early in the book, that's hardly ever used by people. That's unfortunate because it is a very, very interesting passage if we stop to consider what's said. This passage was written, or spoken, I guess. We don't know exactly who wrote it, but it was spoken by Eliphaz. This was one of Job's comforters, one of the men that came to see if he could offer some assistance to Job. And Eliphaz, professing some wisdom, spoke these words, Job 4, verses 18 through 21. Behold, he, that's God, putteth no trust in his servants, and his angels he chargeth with folly. How much more them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, who are crushed before the moth. Betwixt morning and evening they are destroyed. They perish forever without any regarding it. Is not their tent cord plucked up within them? They die, and that without wisdom. Now, as Eliphaz reflects on life, he first points to angels. He says that these great creatures of God, they are powerful, they are mighty. But he makes the observation that as mighty and as powerful as these creatures are, they certainly do not compare to God. They're not nearly as great as deity. Angels are great, but they have some limitations. And then as Eliphaz turns to man, he says, well, compared to angels, men are not nearly as strong as angels. In verse 9, in talking about humanity, he says that people, human beings, they dwell in houses of clay. And that's true. In the book of Genesis, we are told how man was formed from the dust of the earth. As we look at our bodies, we find that they are weak. Our physical frames are frail. Think about the last time that we suffered a cut. Maybe it was a superficial cut. There was not blood, there was very little pain, and it really wasn't that big of a deal. But there are at least some here tonight who have suffered in the past a very severe or serious cut. A cut that may have bled deeply for a long time, maybe a cut that was so deep it required stitches. If not a cut, some who are here have broken a bone. Doctors, hospitals, ambulances, and medicines all remind us that the human body is very frail and very, very weak. Sometimes people become so sick that they cannot move well. Maybe they can't get out of bed. People may have pain that they cannot control. So Eliphaz was right. In many ways, the body that we have, it is like a house of clay. clay. The human body is a very, very fragile thing. The end of verse 19 in Job 4 says that the human body is such that it can be crushed as easily as a moth. Well, that's not literally true. It certainly takes more force to crush a man than it takes to crush a moth. But Eliphaz's point, it was not literal, it was a figurative way of saying that man, just like a moth, can be destroyed very, very easily. Maybe the point that was made by Eliphaz is why our world likes to talk and think about superheroes. There are characters, TV and comic books and other places in the world, people are presented as having bodies of steel that never seem to tire. Certainly they never get sick. Superheroes are those that can withstand bullets, they can stop trains and do anything else that the bad guys decide to throw at them. Superheroes, I think, are probably popular because as we look at our lives, we know that we're weak. We know that we cannot do those things. Our body is subject to many forces, subject to weakness, subject to decay, and subject even to death. Then as we look at verse 20 in Job 4, we find something that's really interesting. Eliphaz spoke of being alive in the morning and dead by the evening. On the way to services this morning, Teresa, who's sick tonight, told me about a man who was reflecting over the last couple of days, a local man who knows someone who has died in the area. And this man said, and we've probably heard this from other people, I just talked to that individual yesterday. I can still remember the words, the conversation that we had, and now he's gone. It's hard to believe that we were together yesterday, just a few hours ago, and now I will never see him again in this life. Eliphaz's words were right. Sometimes between morning and evening, the people that we talk to, the people that we interact with, the people that we are associated with, we lose that connection because of death. Eliphaz also said the significance of an individual can just fade away. And that too is correct. Job's associate said, people, we can even compare them to a tent. We go through the campgrounds and we see a tent. And it may be there for a day or a weekend or a week or a month, maybe several months. But finally that pole is removed and the tent is folded and it's taken down. That's just like our physical life. When Israel or Jacob said in Genesis 47, I've lived 130 years. But few are my days. He spoke the truth. He was exactly right. Other passages reinforce this point. 1 Chronicles 29, verse 15, compares our existence to a shadow and says that we are not abiding when it comes to our existence. Staying with the book of Job, chapter 14, verse 2, it likens their life to a flower. Comes up for a little while and may be full of glory and splendor and a pleasant thing, a pleasant experience for a while, but eventually it's cut down and removed. Isaiah 40, verse 6 says, all flesh is as grass. We have a shelf life. We have a termination date from the moment we're born. Man is so frail that people have actually come up with something called a mortality calculator. We did some reading about this past week, really by accident. But there is now a calculator that has been devised. It's available. And it is designed with a great deal of accuracy to determine whether or not people will die within the next 4 years. This test, and I've not taken it, but this test says that for those age 50 or older, if people take this test, they can determine within an 81% accuracy rate whether or not you will still be here, whether or not you still have physical life in your body after 4 years. Man's interested in thinking about physical life because on one level, we know it's short. We know it's brief. Some time ago, I read about what people do in an average American lifetime. And if you think about these things, I think most would say, well, that pretty well sums it up. It said that for most people, 3 years are spent in business meetings. The average person also spends an average of 13 years of his life watching TV. In the average person's lifetime, $89,281 is spent on food. Those in America are thought to consume 109,354 pounds of food before they die. And then this one really caught my attention. Before people die, it's estimated that they will visit McDonald's 1,811 times. $6,881 will be spent on vending machines. People will consume 35,000 cookies and almost 1,500 pounds of candy. When it comes to sickness, people are believed to get 304 colds before they leave this life and be involved in 6 vehicle accidents. Men are supposedly, according to the statistics, hospital 8 times over their lifetime. Women are hospitalized 12. And then when it comes to sleep, this study said that 24 years of a person's life are spent sleeping. Now, the things that I just described, if we look at a lot of the people that we know, this is a pretty good summation of what their life is about. For them, that's what life is. Eat, sleep, make the trip to McDonald's, watch TV, attend some business meetings, and maybe a few years of retirement, and then that's it. My life is over. May I suggest, though, that that way of life, which is very common in our culture, describes a wasted life. I did not, and I didn't leave him out on purpose, I did not, as I looked at this list, find anything at all about God. And I thought, well, that's probably true. When we look at the majority of people and how they live, God's not going to be a significant part of that life. Imagine what it would be like one day to stand before God and to have lived this typical American life that I have just described, and God examines our life. Imagine as God looks at our record, he says, okay, I see that in your lifetime you made 1,811 trips to McDonald's. How many times in the years that you had on earth did you worship me? Imagine 1,800 trips to the burger joint, but worshiping God 200 or 500 times and standing before him and giving an answer to that. We may not realize it, but there are going to be people who, as they go through life, they have spent more time standing in line for French fries than they've spent in God's service. That's true in America. And there are going to be some people on the day of judgment who will stand before God and have to face that fact. Many will have spent years sleeping in bed, maybe the 24 years that we talked about, maybe a little less, maybe a little bit more. And over that same lifetime, done almost nothing when it comes to God's service. Others will be able to say, we saw all of our favorite TV shows, never missed a one, but offered very little to God. Time is a very, very precious thing. And each one of us gets a very small amount of it. That's why the Bible encourages us in the strongest possible way to use our time and use it very, very wisely. In Ephesians 5, verse 16, this New Testament reference tells us to redeem the time. Redeem there means buy it up. Make the full use of time. Take every opportunity to use it in a positive, in a right way. And that's not a new concept. In the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10 talks about working in the best possible way. Once again, because our time, our days, our hours are limited. We live in a culture where a lot of people look forward to the time where they can stop working. But for the Christian, that should never be our attitude. As we go through the Christian life, there's always going to be work that God has for us to do. That work, that divine work, is going to be accomplished. God's hands will be you and me as we live the Christian life. Well, this has always been a challenge for God's people. So in Romans 13, verse 11, as Paul comes to about three-fourths of the way through that epistle, he says to those Christians, awake. You're asleep spiritually. Awake. Become active. You need to go and start using your time well. Time was slipping by, and it was time for these Christians to once again increase their spiritual alertness and truly work for God. The devil's someone who knows about time, how precious it is. And he, as we look at Satan, we find that he's very active. He does not stop. From what we can see about the devil in the scriptures, we find that he does try to redeem the time. He tries to make full use of it. He's productive with his time. 1 Peter 5:8 reminds us that Satan, he's like a lion. He's walking about seeking people to devour, trying to seize people for his kingdom. Far too often, I think, as we go through life, we find that Christians allow the devil to outsmart them or outfox them. Satan sees the need to use time in the best possible way. But sometimes Christians have the idea, well, we have all the time in the world. We don't. In Galatians 6, verse 10, Paul said, so then, as we have opportunity, let us work that which is good to all men, especially to them that are in the household of faith. There are opportunities every single day to do at least a little something for God. And as we think about budgeting our time, using our time in a good way, those opportunities need to be taken. If it looks like an opportunity has not presented itself during a day, well, maybe we need to put forth a little extra and see if we can create some kind of opportunity. Jesus realized that and operated by that principle. In John 9, 4, the Lord said, I've got to work while it's day. The night's going to come when no man can work. Jesus knew that his time on earth was going to be limited, especially when he got into his public ministry. So he was someone who really sought to make every day count. In far too many cases, I and I think some others who are here tonight have seen some people live poorly but die well. By this, I mean that as we look at life, we can find some people who have planned out their lives almost down to the last detail. People have decided that they're going to get to this stage in life, and then all these things are going to happen. And in some cases, people have been successful. People have sometimes laid some very careful plans for retirement in this culture, and those plans were fulfilled. And then after they enjoyed retirement for a while, I've seen cases where people made some elaborate funeral plans. I've seen some funeral arrangements that were as detailed and maybe even more detailed than a wedding. They got it down to all the colors and who is going to do the preaching and who is going to say what. And I mean, it really went A to Z as far as covering all the angles for the funeral. Others, though, have lived well. Many have lived well and died poorly, but there have also been people who have lived poorly and died well. These people are individuals who have sought to use their time in the best possible way for God. Once again, it's not a passage that we read from very often. Matthew and John, I think, oftentimes get more attention than maybe the other two writers. But in Luke chapter 12, verses 34 through 37, Jesus, in a passage which isn't used too often, talked about making full use of our time. Luke 12, starting with the information in verse 34, he said, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." And then he says this, "Let your loins be girded about, and your lamps burning, and be ye yourselves like unto men looking for the Lord, when he shall return from the marriage feast, that when he cometh and knocketh, they that straightway open unto him. Blessed are those servants, whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you, that he shall gird himself, and make them sit down to meat, and shall come and serve them." We live in a culture where we don't talk about girding up the loins, but in this day and time, that was something that people did. They wore these long robes, and as they were getting ready to work, they would gird up their loins. They would go ahead and tighten those robes and pull that belt. They would cinch that belt and say, "Okay, we're clothed. We're ready to go to work. Show us what to do." When we approach a new day, it's often the case that as we look at that new day, we think about perhaps all the things that need to be accomplished. As we look at the list of things that we hope to get accomplished that day, we can say there is a lot on the list for this day and maybe even that week. We oftentimes have, or we find other people who have the attitude that there are not enough hours in the day to get all the things done that need to be accomplished. Well, there certainly are many things to do in the secular realm, but this also needs to be our attitude in the spiritual realm. We need to stay focused on the fact that our lives are short. That's true for each one of us. Even if God allows us to live for 100 years, or maybe like the good doctor, 114 years. When we come to the end of our life, whenever that is, our days, just like those of Israel, will have been few. Because that's the case, we need to do what Jesus said in Luke 13. Do our best to be focused on the will of God, to stay centered on that fact and on that activity every single day that we live. We want to be one of God's faithful workers. We as individuals may in our lifetime never own a house. We may never own a decent car or multiple cars. We, as we go through life, may not have a lot of money or many resources, but each one of us will be a steward of the greatest resource that this world has ever seen. That resource is time. God, as we go through life, gives us a choice of how we're going to use our hours. Are we going to use them wisely? Well, are we going to redeem the time, as Paul talked about in Ephesians chapter 5? Or are we going to somehow mismanage, misuse, and waste that time? As we start another week, it's a good time to ask ourselves how we're doing when it comes to using our time for God. As we think about today, as we think about the last week, the last month, the last year, have there been times where we have cheated God when it comes to using our time well? Have we somehow mismanaged our time and thereby shorted God? Or, and no one's going to be perfect, or are we someone who is truly trying to be a good steward with time as we serve the Lord? That's what we need to do. That's what Jesus was encouraging people to do with our scripture reading from Luke. And if we become a Christian, that's the right choice. Every day, as we think about budgeting our time, to make sure that God is part of that time budget, because it's a gift from him, and it's a gift that we are accountable for. We are literally a steward of our time. If we've not become a Christian, time is running out for us. We don't know when the day is going to come, whether the Lord returns or whether we die. But one day our time will expire. And if we've not obeyed the gospel by that time, we're not going to be in a right relationship with God, and there will be no more opportunities. So tonight, if you're someone who has thought about your life, and you know that your relationship with God is not right, but you believe, and you have some desire to live as the Bible describes, repent. Tonight you can take a few precious minutes to confess that Christ is the Son of God, to be buried with the Lord in baptism, and then to begin to use your time in the greatest possible way in service to God. Can we help you take a few minutes to become a Christian? or if you have become a Christian and time is not something that you've used well, can we encourage you to start doing that in a way that would please God and a way that you know would be right? If we can do either of those things or help you in another way, will you let us know what that need is as we stand and sing the selected song?
Alas, and in my Savior plead, and in my Sovereign die, would he devote that sacred head for such a one as I? At the cross, where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart rolled away, it was there I received my sight, and now I am happy all the day. Well might the sun in darkness hide and shut his glories in, when Christ the mighty Maker died for man the creature's sin. At the cross, where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart rolled away, it was there by faith I received my sight, and now I am happy all the day. But drops of grief can ne'er repay the debt of love I owe. Here, Lord, I give myself away. 'Tis all that I can do. At the cross, where I first saw the light, and the burden of my heart rolled away, it was there by faith I received my sight, and now I am happy all the day.
You seated, please. If there are any, we're not able to partake of the Lord's Supper this morning. If you come to the front pew at this time, you'll be served.